There are 32 shades of black, and you keep giving us the same shade.
It's a good point about Hollywood, but it's misplaced when you put it in Kenya's lap.
Nothing about this show screams, this is for us, by us. You're not going to get a FUBU feel watching this show.
When you take words like Black AF, there's a level of radicalness.
I think Kenya Burns has become a victim of his own success. If you seem blackish, you seem mixish. So there's really no point to see black as fuck, because it's all the same thing.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Natasha S. Alford.
And I'm your co-host, Blue Talusma. And this week we are asking, Dear Culture, what does it really mean to be Black AF?
This past week, a new show dropped on Netflix that had all of Black Twitter and then some talking. Kenya Barris's comedy series, Black AF, follows a heavyweight Hollywood exec, his wife, and six children as they navigate life on the other side of wealth and privilege.
But even though the show hit our streaming playlist just in time for quarantine and chill, a lot of people are debating whether the show is really Black AF and whether Barris's show provides hilarious insight into a unique Black American experience, or if it's simply a parody of Blackness and one that makes Black people the actual butt of the joke.
But the even bigger debate here is about more than this show. It's about representation in Hollywood. Who tells our stories and what counts as an authentic definition of Blackness? So first, before we dive into breaking this story down and all of these larger themes, Blue, I have to ask, did you watch the show? And if so, how far did you get?
I actually binge watched it at midnight because I was so curious about what it was. And when I went on Twitter, I was actually surprised by the reaction it received, because the first two episodes, I was kind of skeptical because I was like, is he trying to be Larry David? For those of you who don't know, Larry David, he did Seinfeld and then later did a show called Curb Your Enthusiasm. But by episode three, I was completely bought in. All of my skepticism went out the window. And I actually found myself laughing at how much Kenya seems to be in on the joke. And he's very actively dragging himself, which I thought Black Twitter would like, but apparently they're still upset.
I mean, we might argue.
Great earrings. What are those, door knockers?
Amongst ourselves.
Remind me to change my will.
But if you come for our family.
Hi, babe.
Hey, Mom.
Look at that hair, purple.
You're gonna get that smoke.
So hip hop, girl.
Liddy. You don't want that smoke.
Anyway, what were you saying about your tiny house with no electricity?
Yeah, Blue, you hit on a very important point, which is that there were lots of mixed reviews when it came to the show. We saw a lot of folks who loved the show. Here's a tweet from GrahamIam319, who writes, I don't like all the negative things being said about Black AF. It was a good and funny mockumentary, like, why is there so much hate? And then you have tweets like this one from Mia Ortiz. Does anyone else feel like the TV series Black AF is not for an actual Black audience? I couldn't watch past 5 minutes. I cringed the whole time. Blue, as you can see, the show is stirring a lot of debate and raising really big questions. That's why we have to talk about it a little bit more. And to help us with the context of this, we've called Courtney Wills, our entertainment director for The Griot, who's based out in LA, who also spoke with Kenya Barris directly. Hey, Courtney, thanks so much for taking time to be here on the Dear Culture podcast. How are you?
Hey, ladies, I am good.
Courtney, the first question I have is, who is Kenya Barris? Like, if people don't know him, what's his reputation and what is he known for?
Kenya Barris is definitely royalty in Hollywood these days. A lot of people only know him from his ABC hit Black-ish and the resulting spinoffs, which include Grown-ish and Mixed-ish. His casting decisions gave us some of Hollywood's brightest stars of today, including Marsai Martin and Yara Shahidi. But Kenya's career started way before he was the topic of conversation on ABC. I mean, he's from Englewood. He went to Clark Atlanta University. He co-created and produced America's Next Top Model with Tyra Banks, which, if y'all can remember, was really groundbreaking at the time. He wrote The Game. He wrote Soul Food. He wrote Girls Trip. His work spans far beyond the Black-ish universe, and Black AF is his first offering from an incredible overall deal he signed with Netflix after parting ways with ABC. Rumor has it, the overall deal he inked with Netflix was worth $100 million, and Black AF is his first offering from that huge arrangement.
apparently Black AF wasn't always the name of the show. What was the show originally called when the announcement was made? And do you know anything about how that changed?
I know that when the show was first introduced and picked up by Netflix, it was going to be called Black Excellence. We can still see a little remnants of that in the show opener, that kind of collage and montage of, you know, iconic Black folks that we see and the song that's playing in the Black background. But when I spoke to Kenya, he also said that he, for a while, considered calling the show Because of Slavery.
Speaking of Because of Slavery, can you shed some light for us, Courtney, on like what are some of the politics behind getting a show like this on television? Because we don't often get these kind of chances. And I think the audience might not be clear about what kind of expert level maneuvering someone like Kenya would have to do to even get this to get on air.
If you want to know what pull looks like, if you want to know what rolling the dice and actually not caring about what a huge portion of the audience may think, there you go. For a Black man to be able to say freely, I fucking hate white people, and here's why. Here are several examples of why, should show you what kind of risks Kenya Barris is taking here and who he's turning his nose up at. Because even though the crux of the show, Black-ish, is very similar to Black AF, he would never have been able to say that on ABC. Ever.
Listening to you talk right now is providing so much context, even for us, and we work with you. Do you think that the lack of context might be behind some of the critiques that we've seen?
I do. I think that the redundancy of Kenya Barris telling a story about his nuclear family could be seen as lazy. It could be looked at in several ways. The way that I look at it and the way that I think Kenya understands it, again, is here's this show that the mainstream loved in a way that I actually wanted to tell it. Here's a way for me to tell my story to Black people. The same story I've been telling to white people, been winning awards for from white people, because I made it palpable enough for them to digest and celebrate. Here's the real story. Or here's how it would look if I could tell it the way that I wanted to. So is it redundant? Yes, of course it is. But does the redundancy itself make a point? I personally think that it does. And I think the amount of rejection that the show is getting from the Black audience is very, very telling about some of the tensions that still resonate with our community. Because it's not white people saying, this is too much. It's Black folks saying, we don't want this. And I have to ask, why not?
Because we're never scared to engage with critiques, we called up one of our regular Griot contributors who is not happy AF about Black AF. He tells us why others agree with him.
Ernest Owens is also the CEO of Ernest Media Empire and is calling in today from Philadelphia. Hey, Ernest.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Let's get to it because we really want to know, how much of the show did you actually watch? And what did you really think of it?
I watched the entire 8 episodes and I wasn't impressed. I really thought that this was a recycled, rehashed version of Barris's previous shows. The cast didn't change. The aesthetic makeup didn't change. It just had more curse words and it just seemed even more performative than what the original ABC show was doing. And after 4 shows of like almost the same issues being explored, I'm just trying to figure out what makes this any different.
It may seem like an oversimplification, but using Black AF does kind of create high expectations because it kind of represents a whole culture. The show was originally called Black Excellence. Do you think it would have been received differently if it stuck with that name?
I think it would have been different. I think that, again, when you take words like Black AF, there's a level of radicalness that comes out of that. I'm the consumer. It's about my interpretation of it. You're saying you're making this for Black people. You're saying you're making this for them. And you're saying the show was Black AF. And when I look on the screen, I don't see where the Black AF is to a large community of Black folks that don't live those types of lives. Majority of us don't live that kind of lifestyle, don't have our families looking like that. And you got a lot of people looking at like, I can't relate.
This would be a great place to play Count the Black People.
That'll be a very short game.
Incredibly short.
So I have a question here. If Kenya Barris is being autobiographical, and this is what his family actually looks like, why are we not giving him the grace to stay in his lane, as we usually say, and speak about his family?
The reality is that how many you know, Black film creators get access to make television shows that just show non-racially ambiguous families or just full dark-skinned characters and families on television. It's something to be said for the fact that the industry gets to handpick which Black people tell what stories. And oftentimes those stories have to involve and center light-skinned families and people. And so I don't think it's so much that it's Barris's problem, but I do think Barris represents that and he benefits off of that largely in this canon. And if we don't, as consumers, question who gets access, who gets the resources and funding to tell a certain type of story that gets to be the Black story, the cultural story, the experience that everyone else gets to consume, then we are not doing a good job of once again uplifting and including dark-skinned people in these conversations if we're going to talk about things being Black AF. So I just think, for me, it's not so much that, okay, yes, Barris has his experience and he wants to share that, but I think that, once again, we don't ever get a chance to see nuance or see people who look different be shared. And if it is about his family, yes. And I wonder, why can't he think outside the box to make other shows that include Black families? Why won't he ever do a show about his family that does not include his immediate family? Because Barris is non-racially ambiguous. He's from Inglewood, California. I'm interested in hearing his story. I'm interested in DeAndre's story on Blackish. Why do we only get Rainbow's story? Why do we only get the story centering the light-skinned people? Grownish is the same way. Why do we not get the other side? Why do we always have to get the remixes of what it's like in interracial world or light-skinned worlds? Why do we get that? And I think that that's what I would challenge.
And so I think what ends up happening as creatives, this is why Black creatives sometimes feel like it's impossible to make Black audiences happy, because we always say keep it real. But if you keep it real without speaking on behalf of your whole industry, suddenly you're problematic. And that's an impossible ask.
What's actually happening is that I never hear a dark-skinned artist or creator who puts out content that censors dark-skinned people being told by our community, where were the light-skinned people? You're wrong. We don't see enough light-skinned representation or interracial inclusion. We don't hear that.
I agree.
I think the pattern is that every time there is programming on television that tells us this is Black AF or this is for the culture or this is the Black is the Black show and we don't see dark-skinned people, that is when we have seen community oftentimes critique it. And I just think that this is a growing pattern that people are cannot ignore, because, again, we look at how limited our artistic spaces are. We don't have that much television and opportunity. And so it's not like we have tons of variety to see. So when we see people dominate the industry, right, they have four shows. Like, who gets four shows outside of Tyler Perry or Ava DuVernay, right? We see a few of them, and it's hard because it's like every single time a show comes out, it is a moment for us. It's an opportunity. And as a dark-skinned person, I look and I'll be like, darn, another one, another one, another one.
Well, thank you so much, Ernest.
Thank you.
Ernest is the CEO of Ernest Media Empire and a regular contributor on thegrio.com.
Wow, that's powerful. This is all super helpful. Now, we also spoke with Kenya for an exclusive interview with The Griot, and we're in quarantine, so it was done over the phone, and it's a little hard to hear, but we're going to play some highlights so people can hear directly from the man himself behind Black AF.
The interview was really great. There's a particular part of the interview where you talk to Kenya about this theme, Because of Slavery. It's a theme that some people hated as the title of the show, and some people thought was really spot on. So let's listen in.
I've seen all of Black AF, just, you know, for the kids listening to this. And the Because of Slavery notion is so hitting home for me right now, because half of the people that I'm talking to lately are saying, we'll get through this because we endured slavery.
Whatever question you ask, the answer is because of slavery. It's my North Star.
I've read so many articles, and I was so going after it. I don't know if you saw the New York Times, it's a 16-19 piece. I think it was one of the most in-depth. I think it's important that we don't let it be forgotten. You know, what we have come through and what we are going through because of that. And that, you know, any aid that we get or anything that, you know, can sort of help propel these people who went through that and descendants of those people who went through that is important. I mean, we haven't even gotten, you know, a check yet.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's never been illegal. It wasn't illegal. It's not a crime.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The idea that slavery and anything that you could do to a slave that was, you know, done to them was not a crime is insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. As fucked up as the Holocaust was, and it was a horrible atrocity, there was a face to put to that evil.
Mm-hmm.
When we find out you're a Nazi, we come get you and drag you out to our house if you're 100 years old. You know what I'm saying? That,
yes.
It allows for some healing.
Mm-hmm.
If someone was a slave owner or anything like that, or just sitting there, like, there's might be morally, someone can take a moral judgment, but there's no legal ramifications of that. Like, it's just, you know, there's never even been an official apology from the country.
Right.
So I think that the idea of how that affects us and still affects us every day is a really important issue that I don't want to lose sight of.
So what you just heard was Kenya Barris talking about his theme of because of slavery. Courtney, when you think about it, is Kenya spot on? I mean, we've seen so many other movies and shows about slavery itself. What's so wrong with Kenya shouting this out on Black AF?
I don't know what is so wrong about it. I think that people have a hard time accepting that there are affluent Black families, affluent Black men, men who have quote unquote made it and ascended in society, who confront racism and or the repercussions of slavery in a very different way than a lot of the community. I think that people have a hard time accepting that there's any valid reason that a rich Black man in charge of his own career should be complaining about still suffering the emotional and mental havoc that slavery wreaks on our community. So I think it's more of a first time thing.
I think a lot of times, to your point, when people see a rich Black man, they see the rich and they forget the Black. But white people don't forget the Black because of slavery.
And again, we get Kenya actually being a little more innovative than I think we give him credit for, because how does a rich Black man navigate the world in 2020? What does that look like? What does that feel like? Where does the money change the experience? And where doesn't it? And those are questions that we haven't really had answers to in a long time. And this show and shows like it stand to answer.
Okay, so we talked about the experiences of Kenya as a rich Black man. Now let's talk about another issue that's come up in the show, and that's related to Rashida Jones and the larger theme of colorism. Courtney, you got Kenya to talk about his relationship to Rashida and what he thinks about her work. So let's take a listen.
She had done Blackish. She was a fan of the show, and she's also really, really, really smart. You know what I'm saying? She's also a historian. She also understands the need for sort of these kind of conversations. And I think that, in a way that, you know, she did not take a lot, but she really went on the journey with me. And she also knew, like, look, she was like, people haven't seen me play this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily looked at as like a Black woman in that aspect. And she was like, that's ridiculous. My dad's Quincy Jones.
Right.
You know, he's from a shanty in Chicago and all my relatives and this. And she's like, but it's important for me to, for people to understand. Like, I understand how I'm perceived. And, but at the same time, I know who I am. And I think that conversation continued to push us and make us, you know, work harder every episode to try and do something that felt funny, but original and specific.
That was Kenya talking about Rashida Jones. Let's just dive right into this issue of colorism. We know that colorism exists. Why do you think people are so upset about Rashida Jones being the mother on the show?
Rashida hasn't played a ton of roles that hit the Black community. She's always kind of been ambiguous in the characters that she plays. Her skin is very, very light. And for some people, they still don't necessarily look at her and see a Black woman. This is definitely the first time that we've seen Rashida go all in playing a Black woman. And folks have a lot to say about that.
Colorism exists, but it wasn't created by Black people. And so I get very nervous when Black people blame other Black people for colorism rather than seeing it that we're being pitted against each other. That seems to be a common theme. And so there are light-skinned Black people. There are dark-skinned Black people. There are people who are biracial, people who are something in between or who are racially ambiguous, right? And colorism for me should be translated to proximity to whiteness. It doesn't just come out in your skin complexion. It comes out in your hair texture. Texturism is a thing. It comes out in your features and your phenotypes. There are some brown-skinned women who, because they have smaller features, they still benefit from colorism despite being brown. So it really comes down to a proximity to whiteness. And so if it's about proximity to whiteness, Black people are not who we should be blaming. We always tell Black folks to stay in their lane when it comes to depicting Blackness. Rashida Jones is a biracial woman depicting a biracial woman, right? So I personally don't think the colorism conversation should be attacking her for literally playing her own archetype. It doesn't make sense to me.
When you're a mixed mother, you are constantly tested on your Blackness. Name the Fab Five, name the Jackson Five, name all the members of the Wayans family. Do you know? No.
I have to ask about this particular critique that we heard that went beyond Kenya's show. And it was this idea of shows being greenlit that represent white or lighter women with a darker husband. It's sort of this pairing that we often see both in reality and represented in Hollywood. Do you think there's something to that critique about why there are shows that don't get greenlit with darker women as the desired spouse? Any thoughts on that?
I think these are two separate arguments. And if you ask me if that critique of Hollywood in general is valid, I would say yes. If you ask me if it belongs in a conversation about Black AF, I would say absolutely not. Again, Kenya Barris is not discluding dark-skinned Black women from his story. This particular story that we've seen four versions of now is not about dark-skinned Black women. It's about this light-skinned Black woman and the light-skinned children that resulted from their union. So for me, it's a good point about Hollywood, but it's misplaced when you put it in Kenya's lap.
Well, ladies, this has been an incredible conversation. Courtney Wills, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me, ladies. This was fun.
Hi, I'm Blue Chalusma, senior writer at The Griot. In this week's Moment of Clarity, we give you the latest news about coronavirus shutdown.
In this clip, you'll hear from Dr. Carla Booker, who is encouraging people to stay home despite Governor Brian Kemp opening up the state of Georgia.
I'm at work today, and I just got the information that Kemp is reopening Georgia on Friday and then opening everything up on Monday. I'm so upset. Do they not understand that we are coming to work under these conditions and to take care of patients and to try to help to flatten this curve and to try to keep people that need to go to the hospital going to the hospital? I mean, we're risking our lives every freaking single day. It's a slap in the face to those of us who are coming in here with inadequate PPE. It's a slap in the face to us that are coming out here taking care of COVID positive patients. I mean, even the, I'll call them healthcare workers. Those are the people that come and clean up after everything that we do. We are risking our lives out here. I'm taking my clothes off at the front door. My husband has a tub sitting at the front door. I take my clothes off when I walk in the door and run upstairs and take a shower before I can even touch him. And you're reopening massage parlors? Tattoo parlors? Why are we going through all this? Truly tell me, is the dollar more important than the lives of Americans, than the lives of our world? Please stay home, y'all. Stay home and protect me and everybody that's doing what I do, including environmental services. We are doing our best with nothing. I think I've had this mask for a week. I just threw out my N95 because when I did a COVID test today, the lady coughed on me. Please, y'all, stay home. Please stay home. Please stay home.
So that was this week's Moment of Clarity. And to help us understand it a little bit better is managing editor of The Griot, Jaron Gaynor. Hi, Jaron. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? I'm glad to be here.
Always good to hear from you, G. So tell us, what's up with Georgia opening up in the middle of coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, it's a very bewildering decision to make, considering I think they've only been under shutdown for about a month or so, as most states in America. They want to open up the economy. They want to get business back up and running. But as you can hear from Dr. Booker, this is a risk to not only health professionals, but to just Americans at large. They're putting their citizens at risk. I can't help but think about how this would disproportionately impact Black Americans. The staggering rates that Black people are dying to COVID-19, we have to remember that we are the first to be impacted by any decision to open up businesses, to open up the economy. Black people are overrepresented in hospitals as workers, and they're overrepresented as patients. A family friend of mine who I grew up with, he lost his mother to coronavirus, and she was only 63 years old. And so while they can sit in their governor mansions and say, hey, let's open up the economy, let's risk people's lives, for people who have lost loved ones, for people who are working in hospitals, it's far more real than just waving a magic wand to save the economy. This is about real life. And sometimes in politics, we have to do what's best for the people and not what's best for people's piggy banks.
Jaron Gaynor, managing editor of The Griot, thank you so much for giving us that moment of clarity. And if you'd like to know more about Dr. Carla Booker's video and plea to stay home, please visit thegriot.com.
I want to remind our listeners to support and show love to your local Black businesses. Make sure that you donate and you buy Black. The business that we're highlighting this week is the Gentleman's Factory, a work and community space dedicated to Black men. The Gentleman's Factory is changing the game for men about their business.
Even in the wake of the coronavirus, they are offering opportunities for a digital membership. For more information, you can visit the Gentleman's Factory website at gentlemansfactory.com. The Griot has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during coronavirus pandemic. And if you'd like your business to be featured, please hit us up at info@thegriot.com. That's G-R-I-O, The Griot. Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show whenever you listen to your podcast. Spread the word. We're out here.
Please email all questions, suggestions, and complaints if you have them to info@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot, and this episode was executive produced by Natasha S. Alford and Kevin Y. Brown. We'll see you next week.